This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome back to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast where we explore what's possible in the world of investing. If you've just joined us for the first time, a massive welcome. We have a huge episode today. My name is Bryce, and today we are looking at...
This is Gene Simmons.
And this is Paul Stanley of Kiss.
Kiss selling their music rights. We have Pimp My Portfolio and Not Financial Advice from some of the, shall we say, best TikTok investors. To chat through it, as always, is my equity buddy, Ren. How are you?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this episode. A lot to cover. None more so than the TikTok investors.
I know, a bit nervous about that one.
It'll be good.
Yes,
be good.
Well, let's get stuck in. A couple of follow-ups from some conversation that we had last episode. We were chatting about the granolas, or the Europe's answer to the Magnificent Seven.
Yes, the Magnificent 11.
The Magnificent 11, yes. 11 stocks that had been piled together. And we realized that the Aussie market doesn't have the acronym equivalent.
Yes. Yeah.
So we put out the call to the community and went away with some homework to see if we could come up with some acronyms ourselves. And our longtime friend of the show, Charlie Viola, sent us a message a couple of days later. He's come up with an acronym for Australia's version of the Magnificent Seven.
Okay, what's he got?
He's got Banker.
Well, I mean, without even knowing the spelling, that seems fitting given we're a country of bank and miners.
Exactly. I think top seven stocks is four banks and three miners.
Top seven stocks.
In the ASX 200, yeah. So he's coming with...
They're just seven of the biggest stocks. CSL Plays Golf does it.
What do you mean?
Nah, don't worry.
I think I see what you're saying. Seven of the top 10 or whatever it is.
Yeah. You've never heard that saying before?
No.
It's like, it's big in like footy content when it's like, here are the top five players from this week and like a standout player doesn't get in. It's like, oh, what, Isaac Heaney plays golf, does he?
Gotcha, Gotcha.
Anyway, Bryce, not up with pop culture.
I don't think, but is CSL bigger than those seven?
Yes, bro.
Okay, nice.
So the biggest three, it's BHP, CBA and CSL.
Okay, nice.
Jeez, do you host an investing podcast?
All right. Well, anyway, Charlie has come in with Banker, and so he said BANCCR.
Okay, so what? Just give us the companies as you
obviously
spell it
playing
out.
On the Banker. So B for BHP, A for ANZ, N for NAB, C for CBA, C for CSL, and R for Rio.
Okay, so he hasn't just done banks and miners.
Yeah, he also wanted to try and fit T for, I think it was Telstra. And then Fortescue in there as well.
I mean, the thing that my biggest takeaway from this is Australia doesn't have enough big companies that start with vowels to make this work. Over in the States, there's a lot of A's. You've got like your Alphabets and your Amazons, whereas we really have A and Z.
Yeah.
And then you've got a lot of consonants, hard consonants well.
Yeah.
You've got like R's and C's, B, T for Telstra, F for Fortescue.
Canberra, yeah. Anyway, thanks, Charlie. Let's keep the conversation going.
Well done, Charlie. Appreciate it. Yeah,
very much appreciate it. And keep the conversation going in the Equity Mates discussion group on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. Another follow-up. We were speaking about the investment in Fairlight last week, the small cap manager. They say on their website that they invest in market cap range between $500 million and $30 billion. However, when we were looking at their top five holdings, Constellation Software was part of that, which has a 50-odd or thereabouts.
It's like $75 billion Canadian dollar market cap, which is like $55 billion US.
And so we had the question, is this just because they're now letting their runners run, which we hoped was the answer? Luckily, the guys at Fairlight, Will and Nick, were listening to the show and came calling and, yes, confirmed that they do let their runners win. So their winners run.
Yes.
They do still buy within that $500 million to $30 billion market cap range. And they also confirmed that the fund can be hooked up to share sites. So, few little things to close out there, Ren.
Great. All right. So, you mentioned at the top of the show, we wanted to speak about KISS, the band, because they made headlines last week. They sold their music back catalogue for $300 million. Now, this is part of a much longer trend that has really been playing out, I'd say, since like 2018, 2019. A lot of major artists have sold their back catalogues for serious money. Bob Dylan, an estimated 300 to 400 mil. Stevie Nicks, 100 million. Imagine Dragons, 100 million. David Bowie, 250 million. Bruce Springsteen, I think he's the biggest so far, an estimated $500 million. And there's an investing story here, and there's an investing story that we can participate in. So we wanted to talk about it, given that KISS had brought this right into the forefront again. So I think let's start with the investing logic behind buying music back catalogues for massive nine-figure sums. The reason is that with the rise of music streaming, Spotify and Apple Music, music back catalogues have become quite reliable annuity-like streams of income. And what do we mean by that? Pretty consistently, every month, they will get X million streams, and those streams then translate to payouts from Spotify and Apple Music. I think we did the maths on Justin Timberlake's back catalogue. I think he sold for 100 mil. Yeah. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But he does 27 million downloads or streams a month on Spotify.
Yeah.
I think the going rate for a stream these days is about half a cent, so $5 per 1,000 streams. So that works out to be, what, like $135,000 a month?
Or 1.4 a year or something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, off 100 million initial investment, you're getting like a 1% or 2% yield.
No, it's like, that's what I want. Anyway, we'll get to that.
And that's the investing logic. Investors were looking for income. This is partially why this became really popular in the low rate environment, where bonds and more traditional income paying assets weren't paying a lot of income. Music royalties have really become an asset class in themselves.
Not one that I've ever invested in.
Cool.
Yeah, I just, anyway, we'll get to it. But there are different ways in which you can invest in music royalties. So there's the labels that produce them. You've got the big ones like Warner Music, Sony. I guess there's a bunch of independent labels as well that you could go into. Then there's direct on platforms like Royal.io or Songvest. But then what we want to focus on now is how you can invest in the actual funds that are buying the rights to all of these back catalogues. So the funds that are buying up Bruce Springsteen, funds that are buying up David Bowie, because those are a little bit more attractive.
Yeah. Now, it's a good news, bad news combination. The bad news, like so many things in the investment world these days, the majority of these funds are in private markets and only for the biggest of big investors. So one that you'll see quite often that has bought a lot of music rights is Roundhill Music Trust, which isn't listed. But they get money from, you know, big institutions and who want exposure to this asset class. But there is one that is listed. It's listed over in London, and we can buy it through the London Stock Exchange. It's called Hipgnosis Songs Fund. Now, they have bought some of the big music catalogues, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Journey, Chainsmokers, Shakira, and Neil Young. So appealing to a lot of different musical tastes.
Yes,
there. Yeah. And they bought a heap more, but those were some of the bigger names. So I had a look at their financials on Ticker, because over the past year, it's actually down 20%.
Okay.
Which isn't really surprising, because this is an income play and we've seen rapidly rising interest rates, and then you have to revalue all other streams of income relative to the risk-free rate of income, which is, you know, what has rapidly been increasing with rising interest rates. So all interest rate sensitive assets, all income paying assets have been revalued. So the fact that it's fallen isn't surprising. But here's a look at their financials. So $1.9 billion in intangible assets on their balance sheet, and that's where the
music
ownership of music royalties is recorded on their balance sheet.
Yeah.
So $1.9 billion. And last year they did $147 million in revenue.
Mm.
So that's about a 7.5% yield. Pretty good.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, nice.
Feel free to fact check me. Yeah. So that's pretty good. 7.5% yield, more than your savings account is paying. Certainly more risky than your savings account.
Mm.
And I want to get to the risk in a second, but just to close out their financials, despite making $147 million in revenue, they made a loss of $90 million.
Doing what?
Now, this is my question. Where are their operating costs? And it wouldn't be
people
buying music, because that would be CapEx.
Mm.
So that wouldn't sit on their operating cost line. The depreciation would sit in their operating costs.
Mm.
But
just spending.
Don't,
offices,
your cost base shouldn't be that high.
People.
Yeah.
Hustling.
Going to concerts.
Yeah, going to concerts. Yeah.
So that's probably my key question, is like, this fund is an attractive way to get access to music royalties as a asset class, because it's listed and it's liquid and all of that. But you do also have this idiosyncratic company risk, which is they're also a company that's spending $250 million a year in operating costs.
Yeah.
So that's probably the key call out. There are other listed ones. There's a tiny one, Mills Music Trust, which is now just over the counter in America. It's also down 13% over the past 12 months. It's only got a $10 million market cap. But Paul McCartney was, or still is, the major shareholder. But I think it's sort of being whittled down into nothing. And I think that's where this whole music royalty story becomes quite interesting, because a lot of these catalogs are seen as like having quite good staying power, you know, that.
Mm.
But even the most popular music will have diminishing streams over time.
This is my biggest, not gripe with it, but where I think about, is this something that I'm interested in investing in? And I'm going to be honest, it's not, because I just think that the economics behind it are just going to continue to deteriorate. You're going to get less and less for every 1,000 streams, I reckon, over, like, you've seen it in many different forms of media. And I also think that there's only a limited pool of really top quality, good, big back catalogs.
Yeah.
And if you've got, like, I understand 7.5% yield, not bad. If you look at ETFs, some of the yield maximizer ETFs, they're pumping out almost 10%. So to your point about comparing where you could put your money, but I think the pool is limited with what they can buy. And I feel if you don't, to your point, get the funds that are actually getting the Michael Jackson back catalogs and those music catalogs that are going to be...
No, but you see, even for me, Michael Jackson will have diminishing streams over time, like just as generations pass. Mm. The one exception to that rule, Mariah Carey's Christmas song.
True, true.
That's got staying
true
power.
Like, this is also a business model that's now starting to slowly play out and will obviously gather speed in YouTube.
That would be an interesting one.
A lot of people are buying up YouTube back catalogue.
There was a guy who's got 4.5 million subscribers who posted a video that I watched yesterday saying that he's giving up on YouTube. And I was like, the annuity stream on that revenue.
I think about that as well. Yeah, like our podcast. Like, honestly, podcasting is exactly the same. A little bit different, though, because we still need to turn up every week.
The YouTube algorithm is more powerful than the podcast back catalogue.
Definitely. And you can run that without – you could walk away from it for 15 – well, exactly. for like a year. Still get, if we walked away for a year,
but the most recent episodes we still get some downloads.
But not to the tune of a 7% yield.
But if any private equity is listening,
we'd be happy to talk.
For me, it's like if I was interested in a non-bond or dividend stock royalty, income play. So like outside of those two really common income paying assets, I think there are better royalty plays. So this is a royalty play. Mm-hmm. But there are like, you know, Deterra Royalties is one that I think about, which is a company listed on the Australian stock market that has a portfolio of mining royalties. Like for me, that seems more forecastable and more stable than music royalties. Mm. I think there are probably more compelling income and royalty plays for mine.
Just on that point, Ren, I'm looking at the BetaShares WiMAX fund. So it's an Australian top 20 equity yield maximizer fund, 20 blue chip stocks, not tracking an index, put together to pump out as big a dividend as possible. And the last 12 months, they've been doing 9.12%.
So. Nice. Another income ETF we've spoken about on the show, JP Morgan's Equity Premium Income, JEPI. I just had a look. Their distribution yield, 6.5%. So I think what we can conclude is there are lots of ways to get income in the stock market from lots of different asset classes.
Yeah.
Music isn't that compelling for us. But if you are a musician, the flip side is get that back.
get millions of dollars.
I think what we're saying is like the present value of the net present value of your royalty stream is worth less than the upfront money you're being offered now. Yes. So get the bag.
Yes.
This is Pimp My Portfolio. Pimp My Portfolio.
We are back with another Pimp My Portfolio where you get the opportunity to submit your portfolio for our expert to provide some ideas on how it can be improved. As always, we're joined by Luke Larity from Seneca. How are you?
Bryce, Alec, how are you boys?
Good. Excited for this one.
Yeah, ripper.
Yes, so we are joined as well by Equity Mate community member Anubhav. Anubhav, welcome.
Hi, guys.
So Anubhav has submitted his portfolio. We're keen to crack in. Before we do, Ren, give us a bit of a high level on the breakdown of Anubhav's portfolio.
Yes, so this portfolio is all ETFs, interestingly. It's underpinned by a third of the portfolio is an S&P 500 ETF, and then about 13% of the portfolio is an ASX 200 ETF. So those two ETFs together are a little bit less than half of the overall portfolio. Then we have some thematic ETFs, semiconductors, cybersecurity, Asian technology, hydrogen, battery tech. And then to close it out with about 5% in each of these positions, Bloomberg commodity ETF and an international small companies quality ETF.
Now, also, I should mention what hasn't made it into this doc is that there are some investments in Rays Spaceship, and 18% of total portfolio is also in crypto.
Oh boy,
that's
thrown Luke a bit
because I didn't get that.
I know. So. I'm sorry, not all that info made it through to you, but we like a few surprises here at Equity Mates. So, Anubhav, before we get Luke to give his views, how have you thought about constructing? So you've got a bunch of ETFs, some micro investing in crypto. How have you thought about constructing your portfolio to date?
The basic thought was similar, like have a core portfolio and a satellite option. And basically, a core for me would be the S&P 500 and the AXS 200. So I mostly wanted most of my money in that S&P 500 because I'm confident with that market. And then play around with several thematic ETFs. So like I've sold in and out of several other ETFs thematically as well. Like I've sold the ETF, then bought semiconductors. So basically, that's where I chop and change depending, and just have some inflation kind of hedge with BCOM, that commodity ETF is the thought, and just have crypto on the side just to get some returns, which has been pretty good as far as now, to be honest. So yeah, basically that was the thought.
Yeah, love it. I'm guessing you're we'll leave it to Luke. Luke, over to you. What's the name of the portfolio that you've given Anubhav?
I've had to quickly rename it.
Okay.
But just quickly, a slight addition to my previous name. It's Satoshi and the ETF Escapade. So it was the ETF Escapade, but I've quickly made a nice little adjustment there on the fly. Okay, so I'm going to go through what I like and then a few thoughts from me on how you can improve. So what I like is I really like your sort of core allocation, you know, thinking about 50% of my money tied up in, you know, S&P, ASX 200. Now, do I think the ASX 200 ETFs, as a general comment, are a good shout? I would say no. The reason why is I think the index doesn't represent the economy. So, you know, those ETFs, index tracking ETFs, the idea is that the stock market's a representation of how the economy works. I think in Australia, that's a unique misalignment, for lack of a better word. Now, we can have a conversation about that maybe another day and get into the nitty gritty, but just take my word for it. I really like the allocations to the small, quality smalls, and I really like the allocations to commodities. I think they're perfectly reasonable. I'd argue for active management, as I always do, but we can... no qualms, shall we say. No qualms on that particular front. I would like to see a little bit less, and listening to you talking now, Anubhav, like I would like to see a little bit less sexy story stuff and the sectorial sort of thematic ETFs, a little bit more invested in the foundational stuff, maybe not chasing some of these markets so much. And even if you did want to get into that, so, you know, have exposure to those things, I would like to see that maybe through like a small cap manager or a small mid cap manager or a, you know, active manager who's got a concentrated portfolio and can maybe protect capital a little bit better than just riding the lightning on those sectors longer term. You're trading quite actively by the sounds of it, which is great. I think just don't get caught up in thinking that you can get in and out of this stuff successfully long run. I think it's pretty well proven that sort of timing the market on a macro is really difficult to do sustainably. And perhaps think about, as you do make profits and you do take profits, again, diversifying into some more broad-based things. I think an MSCI All World, ex-Australia type exposure would be probably suitable, as would be some emerging markets exposure, whether that's through an active manager or even just an All World was going to get you a lot of the way there. So if you got your heart set on buying ETFs, I would though... my final sort of comment would be, you know, 60 basis points roughly to beta shares for an ETF, you can get an active manager for kind of, you know, 80 or 100, whether that's Fidelity or GQG emerging markets, whether that's, you know, some of the other concentrated global guys that we chat about. There's a lot of good managers out there who've got a sustainable track record for outperforming, who if you're comfortable paying beta shares 60 odd basis points, I'd be more than comfortable throwing in an extra 20 or 30 and being with an active manager who's actually doing a job for me rather than just re-weighting based on, you know, some esoteric index weights.
What ETF was that in relation to, or was that just the
just as a general comment around thematics? Yeah, and yeah, I think if you're trying to play those thematics, there are great fund managers who do have a lot of potential for outperformance in their markets who are leveraging some of these themes, but in a more nuanced and kind of preferred way for me.
Anubhav, have you thought about active managers in your portfolio at all?
Not really up to this point, but no, definitely something I can go and have a look. Like Luke said, like all the thematic ETFs there, like the management fee is pretty high compared to your like the general S&P tracking index. Yeah. So yeah, definitely I can put a thought to active managers. manage ETF first. To something that I don't have an exposure to. That was my another question. Like, how many ETF is too many ETF? Since I'm not going the single stock way, is it like too much diversifying? Is that happening in my portfolio? It was another one that I had.
For me, if it was my money, yeah. I mean, I would be thinking about a much more... So, get that core sorted out so that you've got more exposure than just the US and Australia. Get the numbers right for you. That might be 50-50, that might be 80-20, it might be 90-10, whatever the numbers are for you. And once you've got that core sorted out, I would be looking to the satellite positions and looking to managers there. I think it would simplify what you're trying to do kind of on a self-directed basis into and give you a little bit more process, a little bit more structure, and probably a little bit less work to do. And then perhaps maybe if there is a couple of stocks that you do like or an ETF that you are particularly passionate about, you know, down the bottom there, that 5% allocation or something like that's appropriate. But I would try and find a process that is simpler but still gives you more more exposure across the world, but perhaps with less diversification.
Yep. No, understandable.
And what about the final piece in the small, I mean, almost 10% of the portfolio is in micro-investing apps.
Mm-hmm.
I guess similar commentary there then.
I think the micro-investing apps provide people with an opportunity to hack their mentality, for lack of a better word, and round up, you know, purchases and stuff, which feels like an easy way to save money, get it invested ASAP. And I think there's a lot of benefits to it. I've got no real qualms with it. And the portfolios they offer, from what I've seen, are pretty fine. So assuming you're investing along that basis, then fantastic. Outside of that, I would just say to, you know, incrementally move money across to your main portfolio that's got a little bit more of a larger investable universe, if that's what you're trying to do, and just make use of that investable universe rather than the limitations that generally come with some of these roundup apps. You guys kind of know my crypto thoughts. Like, it's not my wheelhouse, right? Like, if you're on it and you're doing well and you're happy, take some profits along the way and be sensible about it, because to me it just seems like a leverage play on risk on.
Love it. Well, yeah. Anoob, I hope you've been able to get some actionable insights there. And thank you for submitting the portfolio. I think a lot of people would have taken something out of that for their own portfolio today as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I just want to thank you guys to getting me started investing. Like, I started three years ago, I think, and just started off listening to you guys chat, you guys making it seem easy. So I just want to thank you guys for doing that. And thanks, Luke, for having a review of my portfolio.
Mate, you're an absolute legend. These guys have done a fantastic job, and yeah, I'm stoked that you put it in for us. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Anoob. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Love that.
Appreciate it.
All right. Cheers, guys.
Easy. Good luck with it all.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. What a legend.
Bye.
One of the greats, Anoob. One of my favourites so far. What a nice man.
Thank you to Anoob for submitting the portfolio. And if you would like to submit yours for Luke to have a look at, head to equitymates.com/contact. Everything is there. Otherwise, you can book in a time with Luke at equitymates.com/advice.
Just make sure you're as nice as Anoob. That's my only criteria.
And say nice things about us as well.
Yeah, while you're there. Exactly right. Give that ego a stroke.
But Luke, as always, thank you so much. We'll pick it up in the next segment.
My pleasure, gentlemen.
Pimp my portfolio. Pimp my portfolio.
So we're going to take a very quick break, and on the other side, we're back with Not Financial Advice, the TikTok Investors Edition. Welcome back to Equity Mates Investing. It's time for a new segment.
Not you.
Second one.
This is not financial advice.
That's right. We are back. More for the sting than anything else.
That's true.
But we come across a lot of terrible financial advice when we're on... just, I don't know, online, on social media.
Yeah.
Every Friday, we like to celebrate some of the worst financial advice we've seen across short-form video, TikTok, Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts. And I wanted to bring some of those today to the podcast and share some of them with you, Bryce, because it's a jungle out there. And if you were trying to learn to invest just on social media.
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
Well, we were speaking with someone the other day who was talking about their son's influence from TikTok, and his current perception of money is that you don't need it.
Yeah, I think the quote was, "You can just dig a hole.
You can dig to live. You can dig a hole in the ground."
It's like, what?
And we said, "How has this come about?" And he said, "He's watching too much TikTok, so it's a dangerous world out
there." Reflecting on that conversation, I want to meet the creator who's convincing people of that. Like, yes. How good must their videos be? If this isn't a desperate call to the Australian government to make professional financial advice more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what is, but Bryce, I've got 3 short form videos to you today.
All right.
Let me introduce you to the world of TikTok investors.
And we don't know how this is going to go because I'm not the best with this sort of stuff.
Content?
Online. I'm not an online guy.
No, that's not true at all.
Yes, it is.
I don't go
on TikTok.
Yeah, golf content.
Different.
Formula One.
Not on TikTok.
Deep house
sounds
music.
Sounds like we should do
disco.
A sports podcast.
All right, here we
disco.
Go.
Disco.
All right, boys, here's how you're going to make your first $10,000 in the market. Last year, I took $5,000 and turned that into $100,000 in just 9 months by doing this one simple trick. And that one simple trick is realizing that everybody has lied to you up to this point, and you should never be investing in the big cap stocks like Amazon, Apple, Google, Tesla, etc. Because those stocks, they've surpassed their growth phase, and you're only going to get 5 to 10% gains year over
When's
year.
He gonna tell
if
us
you
the
have
truth?
$1 million in that stock.
What's the trick?
You'll get to it. Everyone's lied to you, but you
okay,
got yeah,
okay.
Are you into it?
I am. He's actually, this is good content.
Yeah, the backing music.
The cliffhanger. Yeah.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
If you have $1 million in that stock, that's great, because a 5% gain would give you $50,000. But if you're anything like the average man out here, you only got a couple $1,000 to invest, which means your 5% gain is only going to get you around $100 to $500 per year, which is nowhere near what you need in order to become financially
wrong.
Free. The key to that
wrong.
Is taking
wrong,
your low
wrong,
amount
wrong.
Of capital and putting that into a risky
a
asset.
We've spoken about
like
the
penny
shows.
Stocks.
More than enough.
We've wrote a whole book about
it. We've written a whole book about it. Wrong financial advice. Not financial advice. 10% a year. This guy's biggest problem sounds like time horizon.
I think so. I think he wants to get rich pretty quickly. All right, you
okay,
ready?
Yeah.
The key to that is taking your low amount of capital and putting that into a risky asset like penny stocks, like cryptocurrency, like NFTs, and being ahead of the trend, being ahead of institutional investors. If you want to know exactly how I do that, join my Discord.
Hard truth. As retail investors, you can't get ahead of institutions.
It's simple. It's take your low amounts of capital and get ahead of the best
wrong.
Investors in the game.
Exactly. Low amount of capital. Wrong. Anyway, keep going.
That's it. So that's...
Wait, so all he said was... Just put it in
don't
crypto.
Invest, don't
in
invest
crypto.
In large cap stocks.
Yeah,
that invest in penny stocks and crypto ahead of institutional investors.
And he rightly pointed out the magnificent returns that the large cap stocks actually gave people.
So,
oh, goodness me. All right, so there was a lot wrong with that.
All right.
Next.
Do you take a deep breath or are you
yes,
ready to keep
no,
going?
I'm ready.
All right. Feel free to stop me at any time with
okay.
you shouting wrong.
People out here flexing that they make 10K a day. And
wrong.
I understand to the 99.9% that's a fuck ton. I get it. And so be it, guys. It's a lot of money. You can live off of that. Now that we have that out of the way, let's talk to the 0.001% that understand what 10K actually is. Still hustling.
What is
it? Let me explain.
What is it?
He's saying people who make 10 grand a day aren't making a lot of money.
Wrong. Who's making 10K a day? How much is this guy making?
Apparently more.
Oh my god. Okay. What's the secret?
No. First of all, he's going to tell you why 10 grand a day isn't a lot
enough.
Of money. Yeah.
Is he in a Lamborghini or something?
Nah, he's just... Unsurprisingly, a lot of these TikTok investors sit in front of podcast mics.
Okay. Let me explain. I understand. It's a lot of money. Perspective. But I'm going to talk to the guys that have big ambitions and big dreams. 10K a day. What is that? 300K a month. What is that? 3 million a year. 10 years, that's 30 million. 40% taxes. What are you left with? It's not enough.
Okay,
so you're left with 20. living expenses, you're left with 15. You just worked 10 years and you have 15 million in the bank. I know
that is
so
more than that is more than many people earn in a lifetime. Way more. This guy's lost the plot.
If you work for 10 years, after all your living expenses, you're left with 15 million. You've failed.
Oh my goodness. You can understand why people get so depressed watching this stuff. They understand. Yeah, anyway, keep going.
For context, this guy would be like mid-20s as well.
So how much is he earning a day?
He's not exactly. Well, he doesn't have 15 mil in the bank after 10 years.
No. Okay, keep going.
A lot of money, but it ain't a lot of money because you can spend it really fast. Or I could just work for 10 years and go for 100 million, but I'm going to cash out at the end of 10.
How? What?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Wait, this guy's only working for 10 years and going for 100 mil? I'm going for a bill.
What the hell? This guy's maths is boy math anyway.
Instead of cashing in at the end of every single day, I'm going to work my long period of time and I'm going to cash out the big bag.
Great. Good for you. I have no idea what he was trying to say there.
He was saying 10 grand a day isn't a lot of money.
Yeah, but then he's going to work and earn 100 million?
Yeah.
Doing what?
No, you got to subscribe. You've actually got to subscribe to his official Capital Club waiting room link in bio.
Oh my God.
Comes up on
this
screen.
This is the world's biggest Ponzi scheme.
You know what? If this segment takes off, we should actually sign up to some of these Discord servers.
Sure, and see what they offer. That would be depressing because it'll only further, I guess, highlight how many people get sucked into this stuff. Sucked in for the quick win. I think the biggest takeaway, if you are getting sucked into these videos, is there's no quick win. You can't get rich overnight with this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Final video. Okay. Now, I want to give you the context.
We should make parody videos like this.
The thing is, these go so far that, like...
I know.
So I want to explain what you're looking at here. Two guys in, like, their early 20s, like 22, 23, sitting in front of podcast mics.
Okay.
He said, once you have $20 million, like, you can have everything. Unless you want to buy a jet or a yacht, like, you're set. But for me, I'm like, I'd burn through $20 million and, like...
Dude, I could spend $20
million. What? I mean, I love the ambition, I guess, but, like, burn through $20 million, okay.
Dude, I could spend $20 million before you could say $20 million. Like...
And I even think, like, $100 million is not a lot.
I know, like, would you buy an $80 million jet? Let's say, you know, you get to the point where
you don't. You always lease them.
Like, what amount of money are you going to be like, okay, I'm going to chill out. I'm going to, like, retire.
Oh,
like,
here we go.
Kids.
Never.
What's
never.
He going to say? A billion?
Never. No.
No, no amount of money.
Never.
There's no amount of money. I could spend $20 million faster than you can say $20
million. And then he said $100 million, still not a lot of money.
These guys' perspective on things.
And, like, this is, like, millions of views on TikTok. Yeah. Like, this is... Like, we're not scrubbing the deep, dark recesses of this world. This is just, like, what's coming up on our feed.
It's unbelievable. And the problem with that is that it really clouds the view of how you can... Like, if $100 million is not enough amount of money, you're not going to be doing an investing strategy that we've written a book about.
Do you know what I mean?
Like,
yeah, you're not going to do long-term sensible investing.
Happy with the market return.
Yeah.
You're going to be... I don't know. What are these guys doing?
Well, the amount of stuff that I found about, like, punting on, like, crypto and, like, trying to find the next, like, undiscovered crypto, all that stuff. It's, like, just get rich quick stuff. And
yeah.
I mean, it's not new.
No.
Like, generation after generation has tried to get rich quick.
Yeah.
It's just with social media, it's supercharged.
Yeah. Well, I think the call out is if you come across a video on your TikTok or Instagram,
send it through
and we'll include it in our not financial advice segment.
And do not take financial advice from social media.
That's it. Well, we're going to leave it there. I do have one big favor. If you are enjoying the show, if you're getting a lot of value out of it, we'd love if you could rate and review us on your podcast app. It really goes a long way in terms of getting us in front of new Equity Mates listeners, and we'd love to hear your feedback as well. If you'd like to submit to Pimp My Portfolio or have a question or are interested in joining us on any of the other segments, equitymates.com/contact is the place to go. But Ren, we'll leave it there. Pick it up next episode.
Sounds good.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.